It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Ag tech and farming today are kind of joined to the hip, and it's all over the United States, and I'm fortunate today to have a farmer from Indiana who's very much involved in this, Kip Thom. Kip, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Well, thank you. A pleasure to be with you today.
Now, Kip, you have an interesting perspective. Your family has been farming in northern Indiana since, what, the 1830s?
Yes, 1837.
And sometimes, Kip, I think when you look at the kind of farming that took place in 1837, and that seems to be popular with a lot of people right now, they'd like to turn the clock back all the way to 1837. In the years that your family has been farming, how many stages have you gone through? I mean, you used to probably have livestock and corn and soybeans.
Yeah, so being born in 1955, we had a lot of very traditional Midwest agricultural operations. We had most all the livestock species you could imagine, from beef cattle to dairy to sheep to hogs, chickens, and then we had a very diverse set of crops as well, from alfalfa and brome grass to corn and soybeans. So very diverse operation in during those times.
So why don't you today still have that diversity?
I think a lot of the industry has become very focused on finding their expertise, having one line of equipment, trying to be lean in their manufacturing processes. And I think that's why we have a lot of what we have today. Now, in terms of diversity, we still work very heavily with cover crops and different structures or policies and processes such as that to make sure that we're being sustainable with our business.
Now, you not only are a farming operation, but you're also what I would traditional kind of farming, but you're also producing seed corn as well.
Yes, we're one of the larger producers of seed corn in the country, working with Monsanto and Bayer, and have been producing seed corn for a little over 28 years now.
So how does that differ from just growing corn?
Well, it's a lot more involved with it, obviously. We deal with different parent lines. It could be planted at different times. There's a lot more field processes, maybe somewhere is up to 10 different times that we're entering that field to make a difference. And we have to detassel, take the tassel off the female rows. So that's probably one of the biggest differences between that and regular commercial production.
But you're not getting $2 or $3 a bushel then either, I mean, for that extra effort. It's got to be paid.
We're being compensated for our additional efforts in management and efforts in the field.
So from that perspective, as a farmer and with all the tradition that you've had, you started looking at technology, and I think you've even become an investor, too, in some of this new technology. Is that right?
Absolutely. We've invested in a number of technologies since back in the 90s, actually. And today I think we're in over 7 companies. We've harvested one of them already. And my belief is, and our operations belief is, that the solutions to feed a hungry world won't just be solved by farmers and the agriculture industry. It'll be between a combined effort between people like what we see here in San Francisco, data scientists, and others working along beside us and coming up with solutions.
Well, you know, I'm used to it. In California, agriculture and technology try to connect all the time because we're having this conversation in Salinas, California, at a Forbes Ag Tech event. And Silicon Valley's just up the road. But Silicon Valley isn't just up the road when you're in northern Indiana. It's like, you know, a 32-hour drive, you know, if you're trying to connect out here. So how did you, as a farmer looking at this space and as an investor, how did you start kind of feeling your way into it, of what made sense?
Well, I would say the number one word to define that is curiosity. Mm-hmm. We knew that there had to be better ways in doing what we're doing, and we were always looking internally for those answers, those solutions. And we soon figured out that there were some people interested. They understood the challenges in front of our industry, and they were willing to work with us. So that started some conversations in the Silicon Valley, from people in the data science space to some of those looking at different ways of breeding the different seeds that we produce today.
Now, it used to be, if you were a farmer in Indiana, you would just go to Purdue for everything. And if you're, like, out here, you go to UC Davis. But the way that you would look at the world, you must be tapping into land-grant universities and other research institutions of what they're doing all over, not simply in Indiana, I guess.
Absolutely. The land grants are, you know, I know a number of the presidents of different land grants, and they're focused on working with the private sector and trying to find some of these solutions. In fact, Purdue University used to have an office, I believe they still do, here in the Silicon Valley, to work with some of the people out here, whether it's on computer science science or some of these different technologies in agriculture.
Now, this will throw people for a loop because they wouldn't expect Purdue, which is in West Lafayette, Indiana, to be in Silicon Valley, but I think Texas A&M probably is, and Iowa State and Cornell maybe has some outreach here as well. You also have technology in the Midwest that's not just Silicon Valley. Is most of what you're doing is Silicon Valley, or is it some in other parts of the country?
Most of it's in Silicon Valley. There's a couple companies in Boston that we're working with right now as well. So there tends to be a number of hubs around the country, Boston, Austin, Texas, and, of course, the Silicon Valley here in California.
So as a farmer in Indiana and investing in the technology, do you get a voice as either like a co-founder or on the board of directors of these so that they're hearing the voice of an honest-to-goodness farmer when they're looking at these technologies that might evolve to help farming?
We've been very engaged in a lot of board discussions over the years.
Yeah, that's it. So what gets you excited looking ahead? I mean, you've got the background of your family for 200 years almost of farming, and now where you're involved today and you've seen ag technology and you've got sons and daughters in the business, grandchildren coming into the business, so they're going to stay in it. So you're looking ahead for the next generation. What gets you excited?
Well, certainly. I mean, we want to be able to make sure we have a roadmap to achieving a number of goals. And one of those is our sustainability, and that can mean a lot of different things. But it's environmental, it's business sustainability, it's making sure that we have succession planning in place at the family to run the farming operation and feed that growing global population. We know there's a lot of challenges out there, but we think if we collaborate with groups like we see here in the Silicon Valley, we're going to find those solutions.
Well, your family is surviving, and more than surviving, I hope, as the farmers. There's a lot of other people, I would imagine, that grew up on farms around you that can find a job with you. I mean, they have to be the ones that aren't able to keep that tradition going, that like to be connected with agriculture. Do you see opportunities for those people to get involved?
Absolutely. I see all kinds of opportunities. Now, obviously, the roadmap to get involved in owning a farm is much different today than it was for me in the early 1970s. The capital requirements are much different. The regulatory environment is much different. The sophistication around an operation and the amount of people it takes to run it is much different today. There are, yes, many opportunities for young people to come into this industry and get involved. And I think one thing for certain, we've seen the Internet of Things, we've seen ag tech come out here and really increase productivity. But I think the reality is that one of the next models that'll change would be the way we look at our business model. You know, maybe we're going to have people that own fleets of autonomous tractors that come in and plant our crops. Or someone to come in and manage our agronomic from a spectrum that is much different than what we have today. So we're excited about the future.
Well, if you look at an operation like yours, and you've got it's expanded, it's larger than it used to be, you still have tractors, and you've got corn, soybeans, and you're, right, you know, harvesting and things like that. But there's a lot of other models of farms. I mean, what do you think of those? I mean, just not too far from you, in Detroit, there's a lot of urban farming going on right now. There's farming in warehouses, vertical. There's small, local, organic. I mean, there's quite a variety around. What do you make of that?
Obviously, we live in a free country that's a democracy and has a free enterprise system, and we embrace, whether it's organic production to commercial ag production, my belief is we need everybody involved in feeding this hungry world. And so whether it's that urban farm in Detroit, I love talking to them. I like to understand what their business is about, as they like talking to us. So I think it starts a conversation that ends with hopefully some solutions.
So you're a farmer that's growing seed corn, too, for a company that's occasionally gets mentioned with some. Monsanto is one that gets criticized, but a lot of people that just hate GMOs.
Yeah, I've been in audiences in San Francisco, L.A., New York, specifically for that reason, to talk to people about this. And you know, I don't think we should stick our head in the sand and ignore the conversation. I think we need to be very transparent. We need to let the science do the talking here. It's amazing to me how many people want to believe in the science around climate change. Well, that same kind of science applies to the way we breed plants today and make sure that we are more sustainable. We've got all kinds of measures, the way we collect data on our farm, to prove our sustainability per unit of production. And GMOs are one of the solutions to make sure we have a cleaner environment and are more productive.
And this next technology coming along is kind of evolved into CRISPR. And it's not exactly what we've talked about in GMO. Some are hopeful that it's going to be less controversial. What do you see of that? Do you see some of the of being able to realize some of the promise of what people are talking about with CRISPR technology?
We certainly hope. You know, we think you can actually get into designer foods that are not only nutritious but affordable, good for our bodies, and something that maybe has some positive attribute to our health. So I believe in a CRISPR-Cas technologies. There's a lot of people investing in it right now. You got a lot of people come over from the human health side that are being involved with this. So really excited about the technology, but it'll face its public perception hurdles as GMOs have, but it's much different than what GMOs are of the past.
So do you ever yearn for the good old days so you could actually just go spend the day on a tractor or driving the pickup around and kind of checking out the crops?
Well, the reality is I am still engaged in that way. And in fact, over the past few weeks, I've been out either on a sprayer or a tractor because I believe in remaining connected to the ground. And
it's a good tractor, though, right?
They're good tractors, but it's still long hours.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
People want to talk about it's easier today than what it used to be, but we still get up at 5 in the morning and sometimes go till midnight.
When you look at the potential of your having maybe grandchildren, you know, continue, what do you hope for them and their connection will be with farming and agriculture?
You know, probably the biggest thing is we preserve the culture of our family, a family that's willing to innovate. We're willing to take risk. We're willing to make sure that we protect the environment which God's given us to produce crops in for future generations. So those are some of our values.
Well, I really appreciate the fact that you're living those values and that your family has an opportunity to, and I thank you for taking this time to talk to us on Farm to Table Talk.
Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
There are so many different kinds of farming right now, and people are talking about how they can get their food produced more locally, but they're very concerned about it being sustainable, and they're open to innovations. Well, my guest today is somebody that's right in the middle of all of that, that is providing a new kind of farming system, and having products that are available that meet the consumer's concerns with sustainability, and also all up and down the chain their concerns with sustainability. So I want to welcome Irving Fain, and Irving is the CEO and co-founder of Bowery Farming.
Correct.
Irving.
Thank you for having me. It's beautiful and sunny in Salinas right now.
It is. And you don't usually, I mean, you have beautiful days in New York, too.
We do.
We're enjoying one of the special ones here in California as well.
Yeah.
So you are in New York, right?
We are. Our headquarters is actually in New York City and in Manhattan, and our farms are right over the river in New Jersey.
Now, farms are not the way some of us think of farms, because I grew up on a farm, and we had a farm with, you know, dirt and animals and manure and fences and, you know, dogs and cats and outdoors. Describe your farm.
Yeah, I suspect our farms look very different than what you would imagine from your childhood. So at Bowery, we build large warehouse-scale indoor farms, and our farms grow with completely contained and controlled environments, which means we can grow 365 days of the year, totally independent of weather and seasonality. So it's a reliable, consistent supply of high-quality fresh food year-round. But what gets even more interesting is we grow completely pesticide-free, completely agrochemical-free. So no herbicides, no insecticides, no fungicides. Totally pure and clean food. And in the field, when you grow that way, first of all, you see your quality drop. But right. You also see your yield drop a lot. And in our case, we actually are 100 times plus more productive than a square foot of farmland. We grow faster than the field, we get more crop cycles a year than the field, and we get more yield per crop cycle. And all the while, we save over 95% of the water when we grow.
Well, and I suppose, too, you don't have to worry about those pathogens that come from animals. I mean,
correct.
You know, a bird goes over and
exactly
it has
right.
droppings on a plant or something, and you end up with E. coli.
Yep.
Or, you know, wild boars or something are going through the fields. So you avoid all that as well.
No wild boars in our farms, at least last time I checked.
So, now, inside, let's talk about inside. So if somebody comes up on a farm like yours, yep. which there could definitely be more of in the future.
There will be more of.
Like it. So
does it look like a big empty warehouse when you're outside somewhere that might be, you know, storing things to be shipping across the country or something like that?
That's actually exactly right. You would never know a farm was inside from looking at the outside of our building. It looks like any warehouse would look. And that's what's actually so exciting about what we're doing at Bowery is we have the ability to build our farms in any city around the world. And to be able to replicate this high-quality, fresh produce year-round and to deliver it in a day or so from harvest to when it hits the shelf versus, you know, weeks or months even, which is what's happening in traditional agriculture.
So inside, I get it, one thing. We got walls around your farm.
Yep.
And so so on the one hand, you don't have all this other stuff coming in. You also can control the climate, too.
Yeah. What's interesting, so we employ a substantial amount of automation and robotics in the grow system itself, but another key part of what we do at Bowery is we've built a proprietary system called the Bowery Operating System. And the Bowery Operating System was built by us, it's built for us, and you can think about it like the brains of our farms.
Right.
And we're taking millions of data points in real time. That data gets analyzed. We also have a vision system that we've built, which is actually looking at our crops, yeah, running those images through machine learning algorithms, and first of all saying, what is happening right now? Right. But also predicting, what do I think is going to happen later? Right. And then making tweaks and changes to the environmental variables around all of our crops in real time and pushing those changes out, and they get made automatically. And that cycle continues, and so you can optimize not only for quality, but you can certainly optimize for yield and even things like taste and flavor.
Well, you know, jumping ahead, we'll jump back a little bit here to genetics, too. I mean, so you got the controlled, what we say, a kind of a controlled environment.
Totally
you're
controlled
in, you're
environment.
In there. So one thing you got to add is... What do you make up for sunlight? I mean, where is photosynthesis?
Yeah, absolutely. Our plants grow in the same way with the same rich ecosystem that a crop outdoors would grow. Now, we get our light energy and our photosynthetic energy from LED lights instead of the sun, but our plants have water, they have nutrients. In fact, not only do they have those attributes, but we can essentially recreate the perfect day for any crop or any stage of any crop every single day. So that is what that level of control enables us to do. And what's even more interesting, you asked about genetics, is we use completely non-GMO seeds because in our case, we don't need to manipulate genetics because there aren't any externalities that we're trying to accommodate for.
Yeah, like drought resistance and all the other things that they breed for right now.
Those
so you can use... And I suppose the other thing, though, too, is that you can have a wide variety of unique varieties that are
absolutely,
that might not be generally available to the masses.
That's exactly right. One of the things for me that's really fun is we are growing these crops, which are historically either very, very difficult to grow or can only be grown in a very short season. And you can offer these crops year-round to chefs and to other partners. And so we have things like our wasabi arugula,
which is
an incredible arugula, these smaller leaves that... If you close your eyes, you wouldn't know that someone didn't give you a wasabi plant. And so one of our partners is Chef Tom Colicchio, and he has taken this wasabi arugula and has a dish at Temple Court, which is wasabi arugula and tuna crudo.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. And so, you know, giving these kinds of crops to our chef partners who are artists in and of themselves has been really enjoyable because it's expanding their palate and what they can work with and opening the opportunity to heirloom varieties and other types of crop varieties that historically have just not been possible to grow.
Now the other key ingredient, if you got genetics and you got sunshine, you got light actually for photosynthesis, is water.
Yep.
I mean, how are you controlling the quality and source of the water that you're using?
It's a great question. And so we think very, very carefully in general about food safety. It's a priority for us at Bowery. And we think, you know, as part of food safety, about everything that's happening in and around our crops. And so water is one of those things. And so we make sure that the water itself is always treated and it is essentially only filled with the things that the plants need, and nothing's coming in from a water source that we wouldn't want to come in.
Right.
So we're very careful about that. And the other thing is, through the Bowery Operating System, we have the ability to give the plants just what they need when they need it. So we're reducing waste substantially. It's not sort of watering a huge field and letting the crops take what they need and the rest sort of sinks down. You're giving the crops precisely what they need and precisely when they need that. And so your resource efficiency is very, very high.
So in the drip system, I assume it's a drip system that's delivering water to everybody.
Yeah, it's a hydroponic system.
So you're also putting fertilizer in that as well. So they're getting what they need.
Yep.
Nutrients are nitrogen and potash.
Depending on the crop and depending, on the stage of that crop, the nutrients will vary. And again, that's one of the interesting things about what we can do is there is no sort of catch-all. And not only do different crops need different things, but different stages of different crops need different things.
So Irving, I'm pulling into your farm, and we're in a parking lot, and it looks like a great big old warehouse.
Yep.
And most of these, when I've gone in warehouses before, you got some double doors you go in, and somebody's there to check to make sure you're supposed to be there and let you in. But I walk into the space where it's going on. Describe it to me. If I'm standing inside that door, or my listeners are standing inside that door, and they're looking out on your farm, what do they see?
They're going to see very fresh. First of all, it smells like a farm in the sense of it smells like plants and it smells like life.
It doesn't smell like dirt, though.
No, it doesn't smell like dirt, but it does smell like life. It's surprising sometimes when people walk into our farms and say, wow, this smells like plants. It smells like food. And you're going to see plants all around you, and not just horizontally all around you, but vertically all around you, all the way up to the ceiling.
In rows?
Rows and stacks.
And you say all the way to the ceiling. How high is the ceiling?
It really depends on the farm. And one of the things that's exciting about what we can do is we've built a scalable model that has a lot of flexibility in it and allows us to accommodate our farms to different spaces. Again, because what we're really focused on at Bowery is democratizing access to fresh food and giving more people access to high-quality food year-round. And that means we need to have a system, both a growing system as well as the operating system, that enables us to move not only to cities across the U.S., but cities around the world.
Yeah. Now, could you do it in soil? I mean, you're all doing a hydroponic. Can you do indoors with could you have had soil that you'd like trucked it in from the Hudson Valley or something?
Feasibly you could, but I think, given our system, that's not something that we need. And a lot of times in the case of soil, it becomes a conduit by which water can be absorbed and nutrients can be absorbed out in the outdoor farms. And we have the ability to give our plants the same nutrients, same water, create that same rich biome that's in a soil. So it's not the soil itself that's providing that. It is a lot of what's inside the soil, and we can replicate that.
So you put you deconstruct soil. I mean, you just get all the stuff that's the good stuff, and you feed it to them in this environment, and it can go way up in the air.
Yep.
So if what about labor when in harvesting in there?
So we employ a lot of automation at Bowery, and that's important both for the quality of our crops, but also, again, in this mission to democratize access to high-quality fresh food. And it's important to us. We already are selling on the shelves under the Bowery brand at or below even the cost of equivalent field products. So we're able to deliver an incredibly high-quality product that was harvested a day ago and that was grown locally at or below the price that people are buying crops that have, 2-3 weeks old and have come from they don't know where. Part of that process is the automation robotics, but we still have farmers. And in fact, we have modern farmers. And one of the things that's fun for us is we're now offering an opportunity to create jobs and to create farming jobs in communities and cities where, what you hear in the news most of the time is these jobs leaving, not these jobs coming in.
So they can actually be in the city and be farmers.
That's exactly right.
Now, are some of them going off and studying agriculture?
It's a great question because we do have some people on our team who have backgrounds in agriculture. Now, one of the things that's fun about what we're building at Bowery is all different disciplines are coming together. So we have plant pathologists and plant biologists and agricultural scientists and growers. And then we have software engineers and data scientists and mechanical engineers and electrical engineers and all of these different people collaborating together.
Yeah.
And so some of those people with plant backgrounds work in and around the plant. Many of them work in our agricultural science side of the business. And the Bowery operating system, what makes it so powerful is it doesn't require somebody to have a background in agriculture to be able to be a farmer at Bowery.
Yeah.
And so that means that you may have never grown a plant before and you can come work at Bowery and work among our plants and in our farm and now become a farmer instead of needing to have been a farmer before you come to us.
So and they're producing all these products now and the fruit and vegetables. Who buys it? Is it restaurants or supermarkets or?
So we sell right now in Whole Foods, in a select set of Whole Foods in the tri-state area. We sell in a number of other retailers there, and we sell in some restaurants also. Really what we're doing is we're selling to wholesale grocers, other retail partners that will be in some restaurants as well.
Okay. Now, do you expect you'll be doing direct to some of the restaurant chains, too, in the future?
We already send direct to some restaurants. So Chef Tom Colicchio, who's an investor advisor, I mentioned him earlier. We've delivered produce to his restaurants in New York, which is a big deal because Tom is one of the original farm-to-table chefs.
Sure.
I mean, seasonality was sort of one of the things he's always cared about. And when we met him, he loved the mission. He loved what we were building at Bowery. And he said, you know, I haven't yet had that indoor-grown produce that meets my standards as a chef. And, you know, I went to him and we brought him this product, and I'm a Top Chef fan, so I felt like I was delivering a dish to him in the same way they do on the show. And we brought him our product and he opened it and he tried it and his sort of eyes lit up and he said, wow, this is amazing. And this is not only the best indoor grown produce I've ever had, but this is as good as the best stuff I get out of the fields. And that's when he said, I'd love to put you on the menu. And that was a big deal for us.
So run down the list real quick of the fruits and vegetables that you have. What are some that come to your mind?
I mean, we've grown over 100 some odd different varieties of crops. Right. We focus primarily on leafy greens and herbs now. We have a number of SKUs and products on the retail shelf today. We're going to expand that. We are soon opening our next farm, which is about 30 times larger than our last farm, and we'll expand the varieties we're offering them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we look outwards and see an enormous opportunity in market for what we're doing at Bowery.
So, you know, you take in New York. You can go upstate New York and you can get a lot of produce and vegetables, but primarily for 3 or 4 months a year.
Exactly right.
So, I mean, that's the, you know, I tell everybody, go down to Union Square and buy those heirloom tomatoes when they're there, because they won't going to last long, but they're there and they're wonderful.
That's exactly right.
Can't beat them.
Yep.
But the, so what you're really kind of in a complimentary of extending the seasons.
That's exactly right. I mean, what we're doing is we're continuing to offer high quality, fresh local food, but we're doing it year round.
Yeah.
And that means that you can find that great tomato, you can find that great herb that you love all the time on the shelf, not just in that 2 month season. And that also is shining a light for people on the value of local food, on quality grown food, and that benefits anyone in the local food ecosystem.
You know, as an old farm boy, it's kind of hard to wrap my head around it. I've seen some of this. I've heard your presentation is excellent. I've talked to some others that are going these directions too. And it's just so different from what we've thought of for farms, you know. And even in a way, greenhouses, you could think about greenhouses or hoops and other things extending the season. But put them in a warehouse when it turns out all you really needed to do was add the light, you know, and then you didn't really need what you do with a greenhouse.
Yeah. What's interesting is that we are far from the first people to grow food indoors and under lights. They've been doing it, you know, NASA and the government, students in the 80s and universities and their labs. The problem was the lights were really expensive and the efficiency of those lights was really poor. And then about 7 or 8 years ago, everything changed. And the cost of the lighting dropped by over 85%.
Yeah.
And the efficiency more than doubled. And that allowed for the first time what had only been really a research-driven endeavor to now become a profitable business.
And do you use solar or something else?
We actually do. In our new farm, we're going to be leveraging solar and renewable energy. And we're going to continue to invest in those renewable energy sources as we build new farms.
Well, you're clearly excited about this. And one thing that occurs to me is that every time you go to some sort of future food business, everybody brings up the fact that we're going to have 10 billion people on Earth to feed. It's scary, and it's used to justify all sorts of different kind of approaches. But like in this case, when you stop and think about it, of all the places that could take abandoned warehouses or put a farm in, and you need the seeds and the water and the sun and adding the nutrients to it, and you're farming, that's pretty incredible. I don't know. I'm almost, you're tricking me here, I think. I'm almost getting ready to say it's going to help feed the world, but
we will not feed the world alone, but indoor farming and Bowery is going to be an important part of that equation as the population grows and the population changes, and even more importantly, as the population urbanizes.
So let me just ask you two quick questions.
Yep.
One, I want to talk about your own journey. How'd you end up doing this?
So I've been an entrepreneur my entire life, even since I was a very young kid. So this is always what I knew I wanted to do in terms of building companies and entrepreneurship. I had a software company before this in New York, and I think when I went to look to see what was next for me, it was really important to work on both a problem that I cared about personally, but also a problem that I thought mattered to the world more broadly.
Sure.
And you said this before, but farming itself is very resource intensive. I mean, 70% of the world's water goes to agriculture now.
Yeah.
And just in the U.S. alone, we use about 700 billion pounds of pesticides every year. 700 million pounds of pesticides a year.
Right.
And we've lost 30% of the arable farmland in the last 40 years. And so we have this system that is stretching and being stretched and is going to have to change. And then you look at the stats he said. The population's growing. There's a need for more food. And 70 to 80% of people are going to be living in and around cities.
So this come to you in a dream or something?
Came through a lot of hard work, a lot of research, and a lot of learning.
You
and
woke up sometimes and said, I don't like what I'm doing. I want to be a farmer.
What I did is I said, you know what? I need to be doing something that I'm passionate about, that I love, and that I feel like is going to make a difference for a long time to come. And the more time I spent working on what we're working at Bowery, the more I knew that this was the thing for me and what I needed to do.
That's the thing I like about when I do these Farm to Table podcasts is there's all kinds of dreams. Yours is a little different than some of the others I've talked to, people that decided they want to be a farmer, they want to be an organic farmer, which is another question I've got for you now. Are you marketing your products as organic?
So we are not certified organic ourselves. We could be. Organic, you know, given the recent rulings, is certainly available to hydroponic growers. That's not been an area of focus for us. And I think one of the things that's great is organic farming was a really good move from large-scale industrial agriculture.
Right.
It was more focused on the quality of the earth, the way we were farming, the quality of the product. What's amazing is when those standards were written, some of the technologies that we're leveraging at Bowery weren't even able to be considered. And so we today can do things and the way we grow that weren't even possible when the standards of organic were developed.
Right.
And so we're developing a product that's completely pesticide-free, not organic pesticide certified, but just completely pesticide-free, localized. I mean, the savings in water and resources is impressive.
So when you're marketing to the people that are selling your product, do they put something out that says that, you know, they explains the production practices?
We tell people it's indoor farming. We talk about the fact that it's a local product. We talk about the fact that it's grown with no pesticides. We tell the sustainability story. I mean, people are excited about not only the quality of what we're growing, but the why of what we're growing as well.
Well, it has been a little bit of controversy because some people didn't want to see hydroponics be organic because they felt the traditions were always part of the organic claim in their mind was what you were doing to improve the earth and to build the soil. And, you know, you're not really in contact with soil, per se. And I forgot to ask you about this, and that is, what do the seeds sit in?
So we use essentially what's called a substrate, and we are always trying and working with different types of substrates as well. So you know, there's different merits and value and different substrates for different crops.
Well, now I do have a final question for you, and that is, if you look down the road and the journey that you're on right now, what makes you the most excited about the next few years?
You know, I think the team that we've assembled at Bowery, the quality of people who are working on this problem across so many different disciplines is amazing. And looking out and seeing the interest and enthusiasm, both from retailers and the people who are selling the product, but equally or more importantly from consumers who are the ones who are looking for the product, there's no question that what we're working on at Bowery is going to become increasingly important in the years to come. And I think we're only scratching the surface on what this opportunity looks like in the future.
So there's several dozen communities, metro areas of a couple million or more around just the U.S. But do you see a future where there's some of these farms in all of those
size
communities?
There will be Bowery farms in cities across the U.S. and you know there will be Bowery farms in cities across the world.
You're stepping over the quota of plugs that we use for a company. That's all right. That's right. Because I'll just add that there will be competitors to Bowery and there will be other farms probably too doing some of the same thing.
This is a good problem and an important problem. So I'm happy to see that we are not the only people who decided it was worthwhile to work on.
Well, I tell you, I really appreciate your taking the time to explain this because when we get into farm-to-table talk, people are coming from all sorts of sides.
Yep.
And it's exciting to see at many different levels and many different ways we're finding innovation and sustainability in these evolving farm systems. And I appreciate what you're doing, and I enjoy talking to Irving Fain, the CEO and co-founder of Bowery Farming.
Roger, thanks so much.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.